Oi, oi, it's your boy, Slacky J, coming at you on the hottest day of the year. Gotta be the hottest. Haven't had any days of summer yet, in the UK at least, which, you know, I'm sure y'all Texans are hee-hawing it up at me right now, saying, oh, Slacky J, what is it, 29 degrees centigrade? 63 degrees Fahrenheit? But it's hot. And to podcast, I have to close the windows and turn off the fan. I don't have AC because nobody over here has AC. I could record this podcast in my car on my phone, but I'm a professional, so I don't. And I'm here for you right now in my pants, lean, lithe, sweaty, glistening. If someone tries to arm drag me right now, I'd rip it clean out. And we're going to talk about some fights because the UFC has, in all their wisdom, deemed it time to put on a single good fight. So I'm very excited about that. If you haven't read the article already, you're a Patreon boy, you know it's up. But I wrote an article about Umar Nurmagomedov, called it the Dark Horse. Immediately people were like, wouldn't he be the favourite against everyone in the division? And I went, shit, I just meant that he's sort of unknown and people are excited about him. And he hasn't really done anything yet. But this card's all kinds of weird. There's some good stuff, there's some terrible stuff. And there was an attempt to book Nick Diaz versus Vicente Luque. Post-brain bleed, Vicente Luque. It doesn't matter how many fights he gets through without dying now. I don't really want to see him fighting anymore. Versus Nick Diaz, who is washed, possibly alcoholic. And this fight's in Abu Dhabi. So was the UFC's biggest weed smoker going to go to the Middle East? They had to know that from the get-go. This feels like when I was joking about how the UFC wishes they could do the bait and switch that they did with UFC 3-0, whatever it was, with Conor versus Chandler, legally, just do that. Advertise one thing and then give people worse. They could have done that with Nick Diaz here, knowing that he wouldn't make it. But they also haven't, if you've noticed, all the things that were rumoured to be on the Sphere card are suddenly not on the Sphere card and are going on somewhere else at some other time. Combine that with this week, the judge from the UFC class action looked at the settlement that both sides had agreed to and said,
No, bitch.
We're doing something different. I don't know if they get anything now, the fighters, because it's going to trial. And if they lose, do they lose everything? Because they don't get the settlement anymore. So that judge has basically gone,
double or nothing.
Wildcard judge. Honestly, for the chance of the sport getting better, I'm very happy. But the reason that the lawsuit stopped, allegedly, is because all the fighters are broke. And obviously, the way that the legal system works is that if you have the money to stay in court longer, you literally can't lose. It's just, sorry, that's how the law works. And if you do lose, we just appeal it again. Have a look at that dude who got put in house arrest for beating Exxon in South America. Insane. House arrest for contempt of court, largely unheard of. But anyway, enough Slacky bashing the corporations. These are the job creators, Slacky. They're creating all those jobs, sweeping up at the apex when there's been no fans. But anyway, before we do this weekend's cards, I thought it'd be fun to talk about Super Ryzen 3, because if you didn't see it, it was probably worth your time, actually. I haven't watched Manny Pacquiao versus Rukia Ampo because I couldn't be bothered, but I heard Rukia Ampo actually put up a decent account of himself and Manny Pacquiao looked old as hell. And then Ryan Garcia called out both of them in the same weekend that he got a load of restraining orders from family members and ex-girlfriends. But the important part of this card was the main event, because I'd heard that it was making big buzz in Japan. I didn't know how big. And then Ryzen themselves put out a great YouTube video, which you should go and watch before you watch the fight. Ren Hiramoto, which I always say is Ren Hiramata, by accident, basically a Conor McGregor swaggerjacker. But Conor McGregor himself was a, what was his name, John Mario something or other, swaggerjacker. But a very talented kickboxer, came to Ryzen back in 2020, lost his first fight by ground and pound, having said that he'd love to fight Mikuru Asakura. Because Mikuru Asakura is a massive YouTube star in Japan, for underground fights, and then they signed him to Ryzen, and he actually did pretty well and won a title there. Mikuru Asakura was asked about this, and he was like, he doesn't have anything for me, massive bitch, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's another one of those ones that started out as a Japanese sort of, I would love to fight you, senpai, thing, and turned into a grudge match. And the two of them have been, like, losing fights all over the place, so they've been gliding past each other. As soon as one wins a big fight, the other one loses one. And they finally got this together, and it was interesting. Ren Hiramoto, very highly touted as a kickboxer. I can't remember who told me this. One of the weebs, probably Kai. I believe he has a win over Tenshin as an amateur. And obviously Tenshin wasn't the current Tenshin then, but he's always been very, very good. He's got wins over, I can't even say his name, but he's been around forever. K.U. Wirsakrek. And Kong Napa, who just fought Yuki Yoza for the title in K1. I think a division up from what we're talking about here. But the crazy thing is that three fights ago, Ren Hiramoto decided to go southpaw, which is not unusual for kickboxers moving to MMA. If you remember Rod Tang's fight against DJ, which everyone put way too much interest into, they were like, oh my God, I can't believe DJ just survived the Muay Thai round. And then you're like, who has Rod Tang ever stopped inside one round? But Rod Tang went southpaw for the MMA round, because if you go southpaw, you put a little bit more distance between you because your lead knees get in the way of each other. And when they shoot, you're going to be able to just feed the single a lot easier than just getting blown over by the double, which is another function of the distancing thing. Because if you're both in the same stance and you jab at the opponent, they can get in on your hips and right on, you know, on top of you, underneath you. Whereas it's harder to do in that sort of open stance scenario. But Ren Hiramoto is a huge Conor McGregor nerd. And he came out looking like Conor McGregor in this fight. He had the high open lead hand, the thing that Henry Cejudo also used to do, like he's going stop at the opponent. And he finished Mikuru Asakura with the left side, the open side counter left hand, the Conor McGregor look. And if you saw his fight with Yarman last time round, he landed about 100 of them. And Yarman is just tough as nails and took them. But I really liked that he came out and Asakura was moving around. And what he did was that little zigzag, the Stephen Thompson thing he did against Masvidal, where he was southpaw, so he bounced in and then left and then bounced in again and with a 1-2, and he really rattled Mikuru Asakura, and Asakura backed up and then tried to throw a punch at him, and he caught him with the open side counter, got the knockout under 2 minutes 30. I think it was 2 minutes 18, it says here. People went berserk. The clips of him running around the arena high-fiving everyone are incredible. They had 50,000 people. It's a 50,000 seater, and they sold it out. Or I think it turns out as like 46,000 once you add a ring or whatever. But yeah, Ryzen is, I wouldn't trust their numbers on pay-per-view that they've given out. I wouldn't trust any financials if they haven't, you know, been, they haven't had to release them like as a public company. I wouldn't trust anything they say about TV ratings or whatever, but Saitama Super Arena is massive, and it was full. Or at least I didn't see any tarped off sections. They had loads of shots of the crowd. People were sending shots all over Twitter of like, oh my God, look how many people there are in here. And when they did the match the other year, Tenshin versus Takeru, there were people putting up photos of the queue to get into the Tokyo Dome. And it went like for blocks. So Japanese MMA was a bit of a fad in the late 2000s, but, you know, if it takes a McGregor knockoff to bring that back, I'm all for it. And that's what Ryzen's doing. Less shows a year, more focus on live arenas. It sounds like the Bellator thing, I suppose, but not being on Country Music Network. Do they have a TV deal, Ryzen? Because that was a big sticking point of the match. It was like, get a TV deal, get a TV deal. This is the biggest thing ever. But I highly recommend watching that fight. Highly recommend skipping Ogikubo because he's fucking boring. They gave him Makoto Shinryu, the surging up-and-coming star. The story between them was that like Shinryu used to train at Ogikubo's and refused to clean the toilets for him. And then Ogikubo sort of lazily edged his way to a decision in a really boring way. But the other one was Hideo Takura, which I talked about last week, knocking out a dude in his retirement fight. Amazing. And then there were some good fights on the card. Yarman knocked out a dude. Reina got a finish. Or Reina, whatever we're calling her. Ryzen is fun. That's all I'll say. You know, you can go on their streaming service, get on the Ryzen page, buy the single pay-per-view if you want. But honestly, being subscribed to Ryzen, I always moan because like they charge me monthly and they have quarterly events. But I do go on there to check out some old fights like Kyoji Horiguchi's, some of the scrubs Tenshin beat up, and to look at some of the up-and-coming Japanese fighters that I don't remember. But only that fight, really, is what you need to watch. and the build-up video, because I think they did a really good job with that. And to put in perspective how famous Mikuru Asakura is over there, 3 million subscribers on YouTube, the Ryzen build-up video explaining the rivalry, which is like 17 minutes long, I got to it an hour after it had been up, or like a couple of hours after it had been up, and it already had over 1 million views. So people do be caring about this. Oh, and there was an added thing about like the loser retires, but I think Mikuru Asakura was retiring anyway, to be honest. But it sets up a rematch between Ren Hiramoto and Chihiro Suzuki, who's having the weirdest career in MMA right now. Knocked out Patricio Pitbull, knocked out Vugur Karimov to win the title, knocked out Masanori Kanahara in his last one. Oh no, he had that weird boxing rules match against Takanori Gomi, but super legit. And they fought a while back, and it was when Hiramoto didn't really have any wins, but they're going to re-meet for the title, which is very exciting. We're in an era where generally kickboxers are coming in. They've got enough takedown defense to make the opponent think about or hesitate about taking them down, and then they bang them out on the feet in the first minute. It's just a really weird time to be in. So moving on to this weekend's fights, Corey Sandhagen versus Umar Nurmagomedov. In the article, I called this, I think it was a shining beacon of hope rising out of the Apex swamp. This fight has been in the works for a year. It was due in August, I think second week of August, first week of August last year. So over a year, if you include training camps. How many good fights have there been between that one and this one? And boy, am I just happy to have it. Obviously, Umar, ducking stuff, blah, blah, blah. Corey Sandhagen never ducked anybody. Wants the worst fights. Wants the best fighters in the world. Routinely proves himself against them. This is a great fight. I don't know if stylistically he's the most... He's going to be a test for Umar, but I don't know if he's the most... If on paper I'd be like, that's the guy to beat Umar. But there's stuff that he can test that other people don't. He's going to be able to try and draw out Umar's striking habits and punish them in ways that I wouldn't expect from like a Marab or someone like that. Obviously, go read the Umar article for his habits. But like, I mean, I made the comparison to Luke Rockhold, and the more I watch of him, the more I see it. That here's my big jab stepping to inside foot position. Now I'm going to run backwards and try and right hook as a southpaw. And that's pretty exploitable if you get them to do it. The only problem is that Umar is a lot more, I'm going to say willing, because Luke Rockhold was a good wrestler, but willing to just drop on a leg. And how do you stop him doing that? You got to dissuade him with, well, good wrestling, the threat of getting stuck underneath you, knees and uppercuts. Sandhagen will provide the knees and uppercuts. His wrestling looked good, well, looked great against Yadong, actually. I've been laughing at the Umar Nurmagomedov ? Kick all week, because it's all the commentators talk about when this fucker fights, and he's hit like two guys with it well in his whole career that I've seen. But it is, and like, it's scary. It's a legitimately fast kick and deceptive. It would be very funny if I spent the time laughing at that kick and how... Because DC just jizzes himself about it beforehand. He's just telling you that it's going to land at some point and it never does. Once he starts, Joe Rogan's like, I love ? Let me tell you about ? Because Joe Rogan is a taekwondo nerd. He's the only legit taekwondo guy in the world. Definitely not that giant 6'7" heavyweight. But they just go on and on and on about it. And it would be very funny if I laughed at that and then Corey Sandhagen got domed by that kick almost immediately. He does it in some interesting ways. He tries to draw people onto it. Counter high kicks are... hard to land. Well, no, they're not hard to land. They're hard to do. But if you can do them well, they land very well, because it's a big opening and the last thing people expect is for you to slot your foot through it. You need only watch some of Superbond's high kicks. But him and Usman Nurmagomedov are very similar in that regard. The love of the teep and the high kicks and the flashy kicks out on the feet. And it does seem to be... It's interesting because it is a much less labor-intensive style than a lot of the guys from their team have. If you spend time out of range, even if you're throwing up flashy high kicks, it's a lot less work than constantly going after the guy and trying to put it on him wrestling wise, I would imagine. Certainly for me, but like I haven't been wrestling since I was 2 years old. But I would imagine for most people, even very good wrestlers, standing back and kicking is a lot easier on the gas tank. It's also time that you're controlling the fight without having to physically control the opponent. So they're not like hugely effective out on the feet, either of them. But they do, I mean, they land a lot of teeps, which is good. That's what you want to see winding people. They don't get hit much, which is the important part. And they throw up these flashy kicks that occasionally catch someone, but have never knocked anyone out yet. And then when they want to or they need to, the wrestling is always there because that is their, even though it's their B game by choice, it's their A game by what I would actually be scared of from them if I were a world-class fighter, particularly if I'm Corey Sandhagen. And then the wrestling, the threat of the wrestling will set up the striking. If Corey Sandhagen gets boxed up here, it would probably be because he's also having to deal with the constant threat of this guy shooting on a single, cutting back and putting him on his back. What I really want to see is if Corey Sandhagen can go southpaw for a bit, poke his left straight out, step through with his left jab and throw his right high kick or body kick like he did a couple of times against Marlon Moraes to score perfectly on the open side. I think that was the other way around because Moraes was orthodox. But that, combined with Umar's going back and blading himself and trying to throw the right hook as a counter to everything, could go really badly for Umar. A couple of other interesting matchups. I mean, this we're not far removed. As much as I've been amazed by his wrestling progression and so on, we're not far removed from Corey Sandhagen giving up his back along the fence and getting quickly choked out by Aljamain Sterling. And Umar is very much the rear naked choke guy, and he gets almost all his rear naked chokes along the fence by getting the guy on his hands, climbing on the back, and choking them while they're holding their weight up. And if you don't hold your weight up, he folds you down and starts smashing you. It's a great system of trying to strangle people. If you watch that fight with Bezcat, the relatively unknown guy he fought, Bezcat was choosing not to like stay up on one hand. He'd keep folding himself down and giving up almost mount. Well, he gave up mount a lot of time, actually. And he did really well just bridging and turning over. He just timed his bridges really well. You know, everyone's always looking for better methods to escape. I know I certainly am out of these positions. But if you've got a really good bridge and you just wait for the right time, that still works really well at the highest levels. In a fight, that is. I don't know how well it would work in like a calm, cold grappling match. It's when there's strikes and stuff going on that those sort of big bridge scrambles work really well. Another interesting thing about this one is Corey Sandhagen using the Kimura trap. His wrestling's gotten better, so he's been like taking or defending takedowns head on. Against Mario Bautista, who himself is really good now. That was, I think, Batista's UFC debut, and he did it on short notice against Sandhagen. Sandhagen defends a single along the cage. Batista's head is low, and he grabs the Kimura over the top, sits back, gets the Kimura trap, and that's a great way to get into attacking the back, attacking the armbar, attacking the triangle. I think he got Batista with one of those. And we always say that the Kimura trap is a great tool to turn a wrestling exchange into a grappling, you know, a submission grappling exchange. Not a lot of those around, because trying to sit down into your guard, they'll go, nope, not engaging that. And with Umar liking the cutback finish to the single leg so much, I'm wondering how well that'll work. I've never tried applying that Kimura trap across the top on someone shooting a single and then going to the cutback, but they have to get their head across to your opposite hip. So would it be low enough? Interesting. Let's see. Because if you get the Kimura grip, you can sit to your back anyway. You can pull them on top of you, looking up at the ceiling. So it's a nice way that if you did get that Kimura grip and they hit the cutback, you wouldn't really have to worry about being on your back too much or them finishing the takedown. Anyway, it's a great fight. I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, go read my stuff on Umar Nurmagomedov. He's very intriguing, and we know so little about him. He's had nice long fights, or a few of them, which is nice, which is good for studying tape, but against whom is always the question. I'd be very intrigued to see if Corey can get to the body as well, because that is something I'd love to see against, because the way that the wrestling works is as soon as the threat of the wrestling's there, against any good wrestler, not just the Dagestani lads, it's like, well, I better make my punches count. I can't waste them on body shots, where actually it might be that if you hit the body a few times, firstly, it's easier to hit the body when they're ducking in than trying to, you know, than actually scoring a big uppercut to the head. But it'll tire them out. And it's such a taxing game on the system. Can you tell that I really hate wrestling, as in like doing it? It's really hard work. But it's so taxing on the energy systems that getting punched in the body at the same time, probably not the one. Right, other stuff on this card. There's the sad portion, Tony Ferguson versus Michael Chiesa. Tony, I mean, he's done pretty well at not getting submitted, with the exception of the Nate Diaz fight where he's getting tired late. Oh no, Bobby Green submitted him. Scratch that. He's just utterly washed and he won't accept it. But honestly, why should he? If the UFC's keeping him on contract and he's earning good money, he should keep doing this. It's great for us to say retire with some dignity or whatnot, but dignity doesn't pay his bills. Dignity doesn't set his future up. If you said to me, Jack, oh, you're going to get mogged for 15 minutes, Michael Chiesa is going to be on top of you, making you look bad. And I go, oh, okay, but how much do I get out of it? If you said anything over like $100,000, I'm going, okay, yeah, I could deal with that. I could take a lot of dishonor before death, to be honest. So not much to say about that fight, just sad Tony Ferguson shit. There's some other really disgusting fights on this card. Cedric Dumas versus Dennis Tillulin. Both these guys are among the worst fighters you'll ever see in the UFC. And then Shamil Gaziev versus Dontell Mays. What I just said, but heavyweight. There's a Yaya on the card who isn't Hani Yaya, a Yaya impersonator, UAE champ. What is it called? UAE Warriors? A UAE champion making his UFC debut. Alonzo Menifield's fighting Mirzakhanov, who's actually quite funny. I like watching him now. Does that Nasrat Haqparast. I'm throwing my overhand now. Time to put my head 4 feet in front of my lead leg. But I thought his boxing looked pretty slick in the last one, if I'm thinking of the right guy. Anyway, Joel Alvarez versus Elvis Brenner. That fight slaps. Poor old Joel Alvarez is on like two fight winnings? Oh no, he beat Gekazi in his last one by dust choke, of course. I totally forgot that. Man, he's not on a losing streak at all. It's just that he was on a really good run, culminating in that knockout of Thiago Moises. And then he fought Armin Sarukin, and Sarukin just battered him. And that was me going, oh no, I was really hoping he was a prospect. But then he came back, he bounced back and beat Gekazi. It's just that it's been a long time. He fought Sarukin back in February 2022, and he's only fought once since then. He's had a lot of cancellations. And every single one's been him. So he's been booked. Been booked against Tukhugov, Klein, and Rebecki, all good fighters. Those would be great fights. And he just hasn't been able to make it to the actual event. Meanwhile, Elvis Brenner, everyone was bonkers for this lad after he beat Guram Kutataladze. But his fight against... all his fights in the UFC have been great. But he fought Orobai last time and he actually got... I thought it was a good fight. Did some cool stuff in it. But Orobai, really interesting guy. Using the wrestling but teeping the guy towards the fence. I really like that. If you're the wrestler, why not kick? But Brenner versus Alvarez, tricky. I would think that Brenner's the stronger wrestler. And his top game is pretty impressive. But Alvarez, I love his striking. He does this great stuff, like the right hook and the right elbow he uses really well, and the right straight. One of the great things about the right straight into the right elbow, there was a lad who fought Burkow just like at the end of K1 Max. I think it was just after like that had all fallen through and Burkow fought some guy on like a European event. So it's still very good Burkow. I don't know if he's at his best, but it was still very good. And this lad was a southpaw and he just threw left straight, left straight, left straight, and then he turned over a left elbow. And because Burkow was reaching into parry every time, the elbow just slashed him right open. And Joel Alvarez has a little bit of that. Elbow, the moment you start reaching for things or covering up, the elbow can sneak through. The right hook is a less punishing weapon, but it can go around the back of your guard. It doesn't take a lot to throw. It's a little bit longer. He got Moises with the uppercut into elbows, which I really liked. But yeah, he's a really fun fighter. It's been forever since I've seen him. So I'm very much looking forward to that. Kutataladze is on the card against Vucenic. Vucenic, I can never say this guy's name, but he's a Cage Warriors champion. Or former Cage Warriors champion. He lost it to Paul Hughes, sorry. But then he won a load more in Cage Warriors, and this is his UFC debut. He is exciting AF. If you've seen the clips going up with this guy this week, he's fun stuff. And his recent run's like all finishes. And he does have wins over Morgan Charrier and Paul Hughes back in the day too. I say back in the day, like 4 years ago. And Kutataladze is another one of those guys who's in the lightweight division. It's like there were these guys coming up, and then they lost one and or two, and then people were like, well... Sorry, no chance, mate. Ismagulov, who beat him actually by a split decision, because that was Ismagulov's like game plan, win the split decision. Elvis Brenner obviously was the surprising one, where Brenner stopped him in the third round and he went down in a very scary way, just froze up. But great kicks, great wrestling. We're all just still living off that Matthews Gamrot fight, which, Jesus Christ, that's 4 years ago. Wow. And he's only got three losses since then. He's had a load of cancelled fights. He was supposed to fight Don Madge. He was supposed to fight Abdulkarim Al-Sawadi. He's supposed to fight Malarkey, Moises. Just, he's not having a great run. But I'll always watch him for the kicks and for the counter-wrestling. Jai Herbert's fighting some guy I've never heard of, who has two losses in the UFC. Okay, well, why couldn't we get this on the British card, eh? Marlon Vera versus Deiveson Figueiredo is the fight that I have no idea how to place. There's a very clear line for bad fights on this card with Shamil Gaziev and Cedric Dumas, Tony Ferguson. There was Nick Diaz versus Vicente Luque. I just did a sign of the cross on myself. Thankful that that was cancelled. But Vera, you never know what's... Not only do you never know if he's going to turn up, he will only turn up in spurts. I remember being furious about the Song Yadong loss back in the day when he was just starting to get some momentum. He fights a young Song Yadong. Everyone's hot on Song Yadong. I tell you, my dong's hot sitting here with no fucking fan on. But like that fight, he lost because he had success. He was doing well with like knees and elbows in the clinch and stuff. And he didn't identify that and go, all right, I'm forcing that down his throat. He mean mugged and was like, yeah, and then lost the decision. You know, Aldo did a bit better. You know, Aldo was a bit more one-sided, and Corey Sandhagen. But Sean O'Malley, you get a title fight and you don't throw any strikes. That's mad. This dude, I mean, he's working with Perillo, who has made him quite a good jabber from both stances, actually. But the thing he needs most in the world is a sports psychologist and a chill pill. And Figgy is, I think we're most of us agree that he isn't in like his physical prime anymore, but it's been interesting watching him go up to bantamweight. Was even able to use his wrestling a little bit against Font and Garbrandt. So intriguing, because he could jump back down to flyweight and do the rematch with Pantoja if they felt confident about him making weight. But now the flyweight division is sort of up in the air because they just cut Nate Manis, who's a fun fighter and not on a particularly bad run. And they just cut Makhachev, obviously, on a however many fight win streak as the new hotness. So it's looking like they might be doing one of their half-assed attempt to cut the flyweight division and give up things, where the flyweight division got pretty bad for a while. And then your co-main event, Sharon Magomedov versus Mikhail Alexejuk. I like this a lot. I like it a lot more since I rewatched the Kevin Holland-Alexejuk fight, because, yeah, Alexejuk sort of sucks on the ground. But, and also, like, he's not into kicking. He's very much like one note, the left hand, southpaw left hand. But he did step up the inside of two of Kevin Holland's kicks and clap him in the opening minute of that fight. And that's how he ended up on top. He just clapped him with a punch and fell on top of him off a kick. So if there's a guy that you can step up the inside of kicks on, it'd probably be the guy who's throwing 1,000 kicks around. But you might see that thing where, by activity, Alexejuk sort of cowed into inactivity himself. You know, there's so many kicks coming, I can't pick a chance to step up the inside. I can't really reach down for them because he keeps turning them over in a question mark kick. So yeah, I think that's a good fun fight. If I'm Magomedov, I'd be very intrigued to see him try and lever the clinch against Alexejuk. He probably won't, or just like stepping knees. Land a stepping knee, grab the head, throw a regular knee. He's pretty good on the double collar tie, but if you remember Chidi Njokwani, he roughed Alexejuk up from the clinch really well, just, you know, posting his head, getting his hips back and throwing knees. And you rarely see a beatdown like that in the clinch. It's one of those ones where, like, one of the reasons that not everyone is doing the cool Muay Thai striking from the clinch that we all love to see, it's not just because they're not trying, it's because the clinch is pretty evenly matched. When you see someone roughing someone up like that, it's normally because there's, like, a disparity in skill. So, good chance Magomedov can do something in the clinch here, which would be fun to see. And then Mackenzie Dern versus Lupe Godinez. Interesting if you like that sort of thing. Other stuff on PFL, but it's the finals, but it's for the shit divisions. It's heavyweight and women's flyweight. Very bad. Linton Vassell's not even going to get the $1 million, so who would even give a shit? But next week and the week after, good PFL finals. So put those in your calendar. I know you won't, but I'll tell you about them afterwards anyway. And then I think we got one. Jared Brooks is fighting again because he's another one that, like, this is the story every time. Can't get any fucking fights with one. They're not giving their fighters fights. So Jared Brooks had to take a grappling match against Mikey Musumeci. That was his only fight last year. A grappling match against Mikey Musumeci. And then he fought Joshua Pesio at the start of this year and lost due to an illegal spike. Now he's fighting Gustavo Ballart. Ballart is awesome. He's 4'10". Oh, no, he's 4'11". So he's not legally a midget, but he could, you know, if he slouched a bit, he could be. And he fights these guys who are like 5'5", 5'6", 5'7". He fights normal-sized people, or relatively short people. But he's slinging them around. He's so much fun. He's like what people wanted Massagnane to be. Danielle Kelly's grappling again. Cool. Felipe Lobo has a fight against Nabil. Felipe Lobo, the Brazilian who knocks out Thais, which upsets the Thais. Had a good fight with Jonathan Haggerty and got knocked out in the third round recently. Now he's fighting Nabil. Nabil is 6'7", and he's fighting in the bantamweight division. Insane. This guy's figure is insane. I've mentioned his fight with Superleg before, but Superleg's Mr. Double Jab Low Kick, and a very, he's a very mechanically skilled, straight-laced fighter. And he has to do some weird shit because it's like, I can't even get close to Nabil because he's 6'7". And he was throwing low kicks and Nabil would just move his foot back behind him and he'd be gone, you know. So it's a really interesting fight that. And Superbleck adapts really well. He corners him and I think he roughs him up with some elbows and knees. But such a freakish build is enough to throw off even really top-level fighters. And he just got knocked out Kulab Dan, who's pretty good. So, yeah. Well worth watching that one. Anything else good on that? Shamil Gassanov's back. He was on a great run until he ran into Tonnen and got submitted last year. That's his only loss. Taiki Naito's back. I quite like him. Had a fun fight with Pechdam a few years back. Crazy one was announced this week. They're giving Ilias Anahachi a fight. A fight on the Takeru card. They got Takeru fighting someone. I can't remember who it is. But they announced it for a few months' time. And Inahachi sneaks onto the card. They go like, oh, former champion Inahachi. And Inahachi never lost the belt. They just didn't give him any fights. He's one of the few who was lucky enough to get a fight in between in another organization. He fought for some like little European organization probably 6 months ago. But I wrote a big thing about him a few years ago because I thought he had such a cool style and he was the champion at the time. And they've just done nothing with him. And in the boxing, Terence Crawford's fighting. I don't really know his opponent. I know he's a good fighter, but I think I've seen the highlights of his title-winning performance. But always be ready for an upset in these sort of things because we get to the point where we're like, oh my God, Terence Crawford looked untouchable against Errol Zimmerman, the next best guy in the world. And I think it could be one of those ones where it's like the stylistic matchup between the two really helped you think that like, that just makes one guy a deity, and really, he's just a fighter like anyone else. And, you know, I'm just saying don't overlook his opponent, even though I don't know anything about them. Because I did that with, like, Jermaine Ortiz, Andy Ruiz, all these key fights. I just go, well, I don't know a lot about his opponent, but it's boxing, so he could actually pull this off. And they do. Or, you know, the other guy who's supposed to be unbeatable looks awful. Oh, and Andy Ruiz is actually fighting this weekend against Gerald Miller, who failed the load of drug test, and Eddie Hearn said, I'll never work with him again. And this week it's all them smiling together and, oh, we're so happy to be promoting Gerald Miller. Yeah, cool. Good weekend, I think. If you haven't read the article, go read it. You know where to find all my shit because you're my boy. I'm your boy, Jack Slack, and I will catch you on Monday to chat about all these fights, what have happened. Ren Hiramoto's Who is Fucking MMA Beginner t-shirt, bless.